Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome, and I hope you're having a most meaningful and invigorating day. From last night and this morning, I think it's been a wonderful group of sessions, and the feedback and the talk and the level of discussion has been wonderful, and it's a pleasure to see you all. Again, Rabbi Strochler wasn't here last night, so I want to publicly thank him, and of course, to re-thank Sher Shemaim Synagogue, the congregation, and the rabbi. I want to also thank Joyce Eckloff, the head of adult education, who has helped us in working on all the plans. And of course, I want to especially thank Sarah and Larry Krause, who are out of town, but who since the beginning, this is now year seven, have sponsored the Renewing Our Spirit Conference every year. And really, without their help and support, this would not be possible. So I want to thank them, and hopefully they're watching online. But you know, this is really a special program, Israel and Canada, bringing, you know, as I mentioned last night, five of our speakers live in Israel. Now we're going to have Naftali Lau, who's in Yerushalayim as we speak. And I just want to make mention, I think if I may, and I may, my niece, Pnina and Dov Nickerson, are making Aliyah this evening. They're sitting right here. My sister's here. They have nothing better to do before they go on Aliyah to come to our motion and renewing our spirit. And Pnina will join her brother, who's in Machal Nev already. And I assume my sister and brother-in-law, I don't know, have one foot in, one foot out. But anyways, I want to wish them Hatzlacha Rabbah, Klita Tova, and really a big Yashar Koach. I also want to thank our administrative team, David Tzvi Epstein, Yael Richardson, Susan DeRosa, for all their help in the nitty-gritty and putting it all together. And before I introduce Rabbi Lau, I just want to call on Brian Steinberg from the Holocaust Education Week. As you know, this part of the program is part of the Holocaust Education Week, and as I'm sure you all know, last night and this morning is the 70th anniversary exactly on Kristallnacht. So I'd like, you know, Brian to say a few words on Holocaust Education Week.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Steinberg, and on behalf of Holocaust Education Week Committee, I'd like to welcome you to this afternoon's program at Shaar Shemayim Synagogue. I'd also like to thank Torah in Motion for sponsoring the event. This is the 28th year of Holocaust Education Week, sponsored by UJA Federation of Toronto. Our goal is to educate people of all ages and religious backgrounds of the dangers of the Holocaust and teach lessons on racial intolerance and indifference. This past week, we have had hundreds of Holocaust programs across the GTA. Your financial support is vital to ensure quality programming in the future. I have left the donation box at the door, and if you'd like to leave a couple dollars, that would be great. We know this program will be informative and thought-provoking. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, the way we're going to run the program, Rabbi Lau, who I'll introduce in one moment, is going to speak for a few moments on his experience and the family he grew up in, and then he'll talk to his father, who really has an amazing life story, which was written in a book a number of years ago, translated into English recently, Balaam's Prophecy, about his memoirs, his experiences in the Holocaust, the tragic loss of his family, how he saved his brother, who became the chief rabbi of Israel. He himself became an Israeli diplomat, worked in New York at the UN. It's really an amazing life story. The story of darkness to light, Miyagon El Simcha, to the creation of the State of Israel and the tragedy that we had beforehand. We're going to be using, as you can see, this is our E-team technology. I think many of you see in our brochures, we have classes now all the time online. And this is what the screen looks like. Here it's in public, but normally in your home, you see the person, you can talk to him, he talks back to you. You can ask questions on the phone. Oh, my in-laws are online from Israel. There we go, Avri and Barbara Abrams. They can send comments. You can send comments and speak to our speaker. So that's how we're going to work it. So I encourage anybody to go online. As you know, anybody who comes to a class between now and the end of the year will be entered into a draw for a free trip to Israel. So that's not bad. Classes are all free. So I encourage you. It's really quite an amazing opportunity to learn Torah with scholars from all over the world easily instead of flying them all into Toronto, etc. So I highly encourage you to join us and experience Torah like never before. Rabbi Dr. Benjamin Lau is the head of the Center of Social Ethics at Beit Moresh on Yerushalayim. I mentioned last night, he's one of the leading rabbis in the modern Orthodox religious Zionist world in Israel. He spends much of his time dealing with the social issues confronting Israel, religious and secular Jews. He earned an MA and PhD at Bar-Ilan University, did his PhD on Rav Ovadia Yosef. He, of course, is a member of the IDF. His son, just as he mentioned last night, became an officer in the IDF just this past week. The son, whose name for his great-grandfather, whose yahrzeit is today, as we speak, who was killed in the war. This is the son now who just became an officer in the Israeli army. Again, once again, the story of our modern state of Israel. And it's really a pleasure to have him. He's a profound thinker, a communal activist, and someone who's making a difference in the lives of people in Israel and around the world. It's a pleasure to introduce Rav Benny Lau.
And thanks, first of all, that you let me speak with my father free of charge. Kristallnacht is the name that the Germans gave to the evening between 8th and 9th of November 38, 70 years ago. And in my mind, the Kristallnacht meant to say that we build in our illusion and fantasy, we build kind of life in the Galut, in the diaspora, a Jewish life with a strong, secure feeling that we can continue the Jewish tradition, not in our homeland, without any fear. And the night 70 years ago broken immediately these illusions. It wasn't the first time in the history that it's happened. It's happened a few times before, that people dreamt about secure not in their homeland. And I'm really feel proud to stand here, not because myself, but because my father and my mother, who grew me up in Israel, as an Israeli, as you can hear, and the zchut to plant my tree and to find my roots, my sons, my daughter in Israel, build my home and try to help fix the Jewish society in Israel. This is a really truth privilege. In our family, this day, Yud Aleph B'Cheshvan, it's not a regular day. You know that in the Jewish tradition, Yud Aleph Cheshvan, it's the memorial day after Rachel Imenu. In the Israeli society, we also mention Yud Aleph Cheshvan, actually Yud Bet Cheshvan, with the memorial of Yitzhak Rabin, Zichrono Livracha, 13 years ago, his murder. But in our family, we remember this day, a memorial day, Yortzai day, of our community, our town, Piotrków in Poland. I said our because we grew up with the knowledge that this is our city, my father's city, my grandfather's city. My grandfather was a rabbi until the war, until they sent him to Treblinka, Yud Alef Cheshvan, Tafshin Gimel, in 42. And this, today, it's the yahrzeit that my father said Kaddish after his father and all his community. And I want to ask you, first of all, to move from the private yahrzeit to the going back later to the Kristallnacht, to the 70 years ago memory. And if I allow to start by asking my father, if he can take us to a one moment, the moment that he stood on the door in Piotrkov, when it was the night when his father sent to Treblinka, and he had the privilege to be a vital worker with a special document. He was in those times 16 years old, and he had the document, and he had the duty that he heard from his parents to keep his young brother 5 years old. And I want to ask Abba to bring us all back to this very special evening, or actually early morning, in Piotrkov, the last meeting with his father.
I'll do my best to recollect my mind and to tell you in short, a brief report, what happened that night, which was 13 to the 14th of October 1942. The very important at that evening that the Nazis, with some auxiliary forces like Ukrainians and Lithuanians, surrounded the ghetto, and we were understood that within the night they will attack all the streets where the Jews used to dwell and to take them away to an unknown place. We didn't know at that time that there was a Treblinka. And about midnight, or immediately after midnight, I had to go out of home from the ghetto and to report at the gate of the ghetto, in order to be taken away with all the others who were assigned to a glass factory outside the city, where we were supposed to work. We had a license actually to live. So at the gate of our apartment, actually the external door, I came out in order to come down the steps to the ground floor. My father was waiting at the door and took me aside and gave me a whole lecture, actually what is going to happen and how I am supposed to behave under these circumstances. One of the orders I got, a quest and an order to take care of my little brother, who was at that time about 5 years old, which is today, he used to be the chief rabbi of Israel, now he's the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, and to be sure that he will not be lost. And he told me we are the 37th generation of rabbis, and you are the last one who can keep this little boy alive. So be careful not to lose sight of him. At the same early morning, at about 5 o'clock, I had to report to the gate of the ghetto. It was written by a few hundred other people to the glass factory, two of them, Kara and Hortensia. People who came from that city will remember the place. And there we were taken in, where we stayed till about a week, when the deportations from the ghetto ended. In the same early morning, we already had shooting around us. The Germans and their auxiliary forces went into every Jewish home. They cleaned those houses. The people were taken out with their whole families, children and elderly. And they were taken into a certain Umschlagplatz, which was used to be before the war a military camp. And they were lined up into groups of hundreds. And every hundred were taken away, walking through the city, back to the station, the railway station, of not of passengers, but of trucks and goods. Within a day, the ghetto was emptied. About 6,000 to 7,000 Jews were taken away. Each transport of 60 cattle trains took about 6,000 people. The following day appeared the same. Other streets were cleaned, and by the end of the week, most of the people in the ghetto were driven away to a death camp called Treblinka. The testimony that I have in my possession, which is a copy from what's available at the Yad Vashem, the two men from the Pyotrkov ghetto, one was called David Lefkovich and the other one Moshe Wollreich, they both went to the Treblinka camp a week earlier before my father was taken there. And then, when they came back, they managed to escape somehow, and they came back to the ghetto and reported to us about what happened. Only then we knew what Treblinka means. They described to us the whole procedure, how the people were taken down the wagons, the cars, were taken to a big, big plot from where they were driven or pushed into the gas chambers, which is a huge building, and there they disappeared. The next step was they were burned there. They were burned down in the, I don't think it was a cellar, or it was a ground floor. There were the ovens where they were burned. Those people, where these two guys belonged to, were in charge of cleaning up after the burning of the bodies. They were taking the bodies away, they were burned, and the ashes were spread all over. In the meantime, a unit of that group was in charge of bringing all the belongings, to collect them together and dispose them in one of the magazines. This procedure took place about 12 to 15 hours a day. The train was cleaned, was sent back, and there the next day came another train. Altogether, 6,000 people each train were taken to Treblinka to be killed. Now the night when my father said goodbye to me and gave me his orders, he also told me that I should remember this place or this country we are now is not made for us Jews. We have to look for another one. And the other one is not another country in Europe or elsewhere in the world, but the only one, Eretz Israel. This is where Jews are supposed to live as free human beings, to elect themselves and to bring up their children and grandchildren. And this is where we are supposed to be since the days of Abraham Avinu. And I knew that is a message which is more than a message. It's an order to keep myself alive and to try to get to Eretz Israel. But it wasn't so easy, because immediately after the ghetto was cleared from all the Jews, I was taken into a camp where I used to work, a glass factory, and from there another camp manufacturing ammunition and armor. which was in the city not far away, Częstochowa. And from there, at the end, I was taken to Buchenwald, a concentration camp in Germany. All the time, this little brother of mine became older, nearly 7, and I kept him under my wings, protected him against every SS leader or whoever. Several times his life was at stake, but he managed to bribe some people and to get them out, and he stayed until we were transported to Buchenwald on 16th of January 1945. At that transport on the train, few Jewish friends were with me, and they warned me that this child would not be able to stay alive as he arrived at Buchenwald. So the advice was to give them a chance to be hidden on our entrance to the camp. So I had a bag, the bag I emptied and put the child into that bag, closed it, and we came down the camp with him on my shoulders, later on my back. Inside the camp, we were not checked what we have in our possessions, but we have to leave all our possessions, bags and used suitcases on the ground. So I left this little bag with my son and boy inside, and I promised him that I will not let him stay there alone. So we were all taken to the disinfection to be immune, and we afterwards numbered, and each of us became a number instead of a name. My number became 117,029. His number became 117,030. And that's the way the boat ended up in Buchenwald. What happened there is a story in itself, which I will not keep you busy after your lunch. I don't want to spoil your evening. There were other speeches to be heard. And there will be an occasion when we want to meet again, and I will tell you the rest of my story.
Thank you to share the lunch with us. I want to move you, with your permission, to another separation in April 45, just in the end of Chag Pesach, when the Germans felt already that the end of the war is soon, but the mission Clean Europe from Jews needs to complete. And then you found yourself, Abba, with the whole Jews in the Jewish bloc, sent by train. But your brother, big and 8 years old, was in the Russian bloc, and you went to him to give him the order that you got from your father 2 years earlier. If you can jump with us to this second station, to the second separation, when you and the fence between you and your brother in April 45.
I will try to repeat that story again and again. My brother came with me to a block number 52, which is the small camp of Buchenwald. Most of the inhabitants were Jewish people, not like the international community in the upper camp. And there I was afraid that he would not survive. The conditions there were impossible to imagine. So there was a block at the man in charge of that block, an Austrian barrister by the name of Willy Leitner, who saw this little boy, and he was a human being, and he said to me, this boy will not survive here, we have to find a solution. So I asked him, what solution can you find? He said, there's a block number 8, which is occupied today by Soviet prisoners of war. Among them, there are a few children as well. And I'll see to it if this little boy can be taken into that particular block. So the next day, he called me. He said to me, there is a man in charge of this block by the name of Wilhelm Hamann. He was an educator in charge of a big school in Germany, and he will take care of it. I took that little boy with me. He walked over to the particular block number 8, and on the way I quieted him down. He started to cry, not to leave him alone, not to abandon him, and I promised him I will not abandon him. But I took him by hand and walked over to that block number 8. And there this man, Wilhelm Hamann, a very distinguished person, saw this little boy, and I spoke to him, of course in German, and he said he will do whatever he can to save this little boy. He didn't know anything about identity, about nothing, but a Jewish little boy. And I left him there. He was crying, begging with me not to leave him, but I had no choice. And I left back to my block. 2 days later, I came to see him, and I found out that a Russian officer, a prisoner of war, became very much liking to this little boy, and he gave him some protection. He brought him a coat, he brought him some ear, whatever. And this man by the name of Fyodor became what we say an apotropos on this little boy. And he kept him more or less in a good state for a few months till April. He lived there in block 8 and was somehow protected. But I was taken away from one camp to the other. One of the worst horrible camps was Nordhausen, Dora, where I was taken by a truck to the place under prisoners who became what we used to call Musulmen, people who were about to die any minute. And in order to replace them at their work, they took from Buchenwald a few hundred people to go over to Dora, Nordhausen. And I was among them. And I came into that evening, and I saw what kind of a camp this is, what the conditions are. I decided myself, here I will not stay overnight. And I looked for all kinds of tricks to get out of there. And I went back to the train, which did the front of the train. It was a huge car, I don't know what make, but a huge car. And I came back there. And I found out that about 40 or more men were already standing next to this train and boarding it. It seems that they took the people they called Muslim men and sent them back to Buchenwald instead of those who just came, who came with me. So I went back to that same truck to the camp. The car was driving back to Buchenwald, stopped at the entrance to the crematorium, and they were supposed to unload the car with all the bodies left and take them into the courtyard of the crematorium. When I finished that job, I managed to escape back to the camp looking for my former block. I found it, and I went in there. People didn't recognize me, but I managed to stay there for a while. But that was the end. And there I came back to Buchenwald. In Buchenwald, in the camp itself, I stayed in a different block. I don't remember the name, the number. It was either 58 or 59, one of the two blocks. which I used to commute between them. And there, I went back to see my little brother. I came into the block number 8, and I found him in relatively good shape. He told me about his friend Fyodor, the name of his Russian officer, with whom he became very much befriended, and told me this boy, this Mr. Fyodor, supposed to go back to Russia when the war is about to end very soon, and he wants me to join him. So I told him, okay, that you're a friend, but don't forget where you belong to and where you come. Your place, if we will be liberated and we will stay alive, you will come with me. And both of us are going to one place only, which is Eretz Israel. He didn't know what it is exactly, and I tried to explain to him what it means. And that's what he kept remembering all the time. And the liberation came about the 11th of April, when the Germans were defeated and the Americans came in and took over the camp. At that time I was already very sick, with 41 or 42 temperature. It probably I had a typhus. I was taken to the hospital, the local German hospital, but the personnel was not anymore SS. The personnel were all prisoners from the various countries. I was given some injection, but at one particular moment, the doctor checked me, decided I am dead, and issued a death certificate of my name and my number, even put in a sentence at number, and said that the following day at 14:00, his body was delivered to extermination. This was the end of my suffering in Germany under the occupation. But myself and the little brother survived. He left immediately after liberation of France, where we relocated, and from there we went as soon as possible to Eretz Israel.
We are here to keep in our minds the memory of Kristallnacht, and 70 years is the time of forgetting. We know, according to the Talmud days, when the Talmud raised the story about Choni, said that after 70 years, person cannot remember anymore. He didn't believe that we can keep a story or a dream over 70 years. And we all know that this is our duty, our generation duty, to keep the stories, to keep the knowledge, and to learn from the history to our kids, to the coming generations. And I want to ask you the last question. You are in Jerusalem with the whole family around you. My uncle, your brother, with all his family. A few years ago, we had the event to celebrate the day that you came to Israel. We count more than 100 people just in the immediate family. And this is kind of redemption. Last week we had the privilege to stand together in the basis of Tzva Hagana Israel officers' course, when you saw your grandchild named after your father, that today he's not just the yahrzeit of your father, it's also the birthday of this child, that was born exactly on the same day, and he finished the officer course. It's like a nice drama, Israeli drama. But to hear the name Moshe Chaim Lau in the land of Israel with the Tzahal uniform, this is something, a message for us, to the whole family, maybe more than the family. And you, Abba, have a long, long story about your experience in the diaspora as an ambassador in the United States in the 80s. And if you can say a few words to the people who were sitting here, all of them very strongly positive with Medinat Israel, with Tzionut. Many of them sent the kids already to live in Israel. And I think that it's the time in this Memorial Day to listen, to hear a message from you to this really very, very honored people that sitting and listen to you.
Okay, I will conclude my remarks by explaining to you what happened at the day when my grandson, the son of Rabbi Ben Lau, whose name is Moshe Chaim Lau, was decorated at the end of the course, the officer's course of the Israeli forces. He became a decorated cadet, and I was sitting and watching the parade that took place after the ceremony. And he, the young officer, was leading the parade, and that's because he was a cadet with distinction. That is the only one of that company of battalion that he was there. And I couldn't help but tears running down my eyes as I saw that parade, and I saw that little Moshe, the tall young boy, leading that parade. This gives me great satisfaction. I wish all the Jewish youngsters throughout the world should enjoy the privilege to belong to such a unit, to such an army, protecting the Jewish people, that nothing of the kind of Kristallnacht or Holocaust should appear there. This is my wish.
There aren't really any words to express after this. And what he didn't mention was really his work as an Israeli diplomat in the UN that Rav Lau, Binyamin Lau, just referred to. And I think for someone who lives my life here, and to know that it's only through the State of Israel that we can be, you know, proud Jews living in Toronto. I think we all know it instinctively, but it's important to say, especially on a day like this, and when you see someone, and believe me, he only told half the story. We have the book at home. It's quite an amazing, amazing story of how his efforts and tenacity and ingenuity, how he saved his brother, and look at the life that they all established in Israel. And to have over 100 descendants to come together is really a bracha, and we should merit that the State of Israel should turn into the Messianic era, not just for us, the Jewish people, but for the world at large, and it should usher in an era of peace so he doesn't have to go to see his grandchild sworn into the army. That the plowshares, the sword should be turned into plowshares, and Let it be our prayer to God that we should know peace in the world. Thank you very much.